When I first mentioned the 7th DS Hutton book on social media in December, I wrote, "On the off chance civilization has not fallen by 25th of April next year, the latest Hutton will arrive. Looks like we're getting in just under the wire." My usual method of writing a Hutton book is to start with the title, get a cover design, cobble together some sort of blurb that is liable to end up nowhere near the finished story, upload the book to Amazon with a publication date 5 to 6 months in the future, and then start writing. It usually works. This time I was a little more cautious before pulling the trigger on the pre-release, as I was instinctively not quite so confident in the process until I was about halfway through. I had my title and cover, and in the early stages I felt that neither was particularly relevant. I contemplated changing them and then ultimately decided not to bother, sticking with what I had. Not that either title or cover ever actually became relevant. As Sun Tzu would note, they are what they are. The title comes from the Dylan song, which is about dying in a nuclear war, which is far more relevant to the times than to the context of the novel. Here's the blurb. A winter wonderland becomes a snowbound, claustrophobic hellscape. Detective Sergeant Hutton has taken a month's leave after inadvertently sleeping with the chief inspector. He's a few days into his stay in a small Highland village when the local police come calling for aid. A young woman has gone missing. Hutton, as uncomfortably addicted to police work as he is to sex and vodka, agrees to help. The hunt is on for Alice Shaffer, part-time post office worker, bit part player in a local budget vampire feature shooting nearby, and promiscuous lover with a reputation around town. Add in the curious case of the Lodge of St. Augustine, and Hutton has to cast a very wide net. Someone, however, does not want Hutton involved. Low-level threats quickly escalate, and the terrorising of Hutton has begun. And as winter weather closes in, and the villagers are trapped in a suffocating snowstorm, it's not just Hutton who will be haunted. Blood flows. Screams disappear in the night, and at last a killer will show her hand. I took her hero on holiday because I wasn't sure about the relationship between Hutton and D.I. Callis. I didn't want to bring that to an end, but I thought it'd be too much to have another entire book where Hutton is moping around like an early 19th century poet despairing over his unattainable love. We'll save that for book 8. Taking Hutton away also allows us a change of scene. So now, rather than canvas lined public park in the 1960s precinct, we have snow-covered hills and a flat, calm loch, changing to a tumultuous loch as and when the plot requires it. Here now, a couple of extracts from Let Me Die in My Footsteps. I can't find the switch for the outside light, so when I open up, the late night visitor is lit from the small lamp in the hallway. I wasn't really expecting it to be a hairy, mad-eyed guy with an axe, and sure enough, it's not. "Hey," I say, managing a smile. My heart sinks at the same time. She's 35 maybe, hair tied up, wearing a warm winter jacket. She's in plain clothes, but I recognise the look. She's one of my people. "Detective Sergeant Hutton?" I nod. In her tone, I see the confirmation of the worst-case scenario. Wait, that's an exaggeration. A zombie horde would probably have been worse than a fellow officer turning up at my door. Significantly worse. Unlikely to have knocked, to be fair. "Look, I'm sorry to trouble you, but could I have a quick word?" I take a moment, then step back and indicate for her to come in. Hang on, vampires. Don't vampires traditionally need an invitation into the house? Isn't that a thing? She could be faking the aid of police authority in order to get an invite, so she juices me and then, boom, just as we're in the throes of passion, we get the neck biting. Or, you know, she bites some other part of my body. Maybe she's an actual vampire police officer. There's all sorts of weird shit in the Highlands, right? She's staring at me, and I realise I'm standing in the hall, drifting off in some fantasy world. At least she doesn't snap her fingers in front of my face like the chief would have done. "Sorry," I say, start to walk through to the kitchen. "You want a cup of tea or something? There's wine," I throw into the mix. Yep, the wagon was abandoned after the sex, and now I'm on holiday. What exactly would be the point of coming on holiday and not drinking? 2 days ago I was sitting on top of Monroe, the name of which was lost on me, indeed was it even a Monroe, but the sun was shining, the air was crisp and clear and perfect, and I drank a half bottle of Vouvray, and it was the finest Vouvray any bastard ever drank. "A cup of tea would be nice," she says. Then, as I'm reaching for the kettle, she adds, "Help it, been a long day, wine if you've got it, just a small glass." I smile, lift the wine from the fridge, which of course is an unopened bottle, because who leaves a bottle unfinished when they're on holiday, and I pour a couple of glasses and take a seat at the table. And here we are. That happened quickly. 2 minutes ago, I was sitting at the table with a cup of tea and I was about to head to bed. And now I've got a glass of wine, a woman opposite. She's taking her jacket off and draping it over their chair. She lifts the glass, makes a cheers gesture, closes her eyes while she savours the first sip, and then places the glass back on the table. "Nice," she says. My sip didn't taste so nice. End of the evening, bottle already drunk, my mouth anticipating toothpaste. "So you just invite anyone into your house at 11 o'clock in the evening?" she asks with a curious smile. "I'm making some assumptions," I say, and she raises her eyebrows. "You're police," I'm going to say, and I pause while I consider whether or not I might offend her. "I'll say you're the constable from the village, and here you are at the home of the visiting police sergeant, so I didn't book the accommodation using my rank, and I obviously haven't broadcast my arrival, which means you must have a problem. You contacted the centre looking for help. They said they couldn't afford anyone. You said, I really could use some help here, and word somehow found its way out into the world that D.S. Hutton from Canvas Lang was in vicinity, because my line of command knows where I am, and now you're turning up at 11 in the evening to ask for help. And I'm guessing you meant to come earlier, but the day got away from you." She's taken another couple of drinks of wine while I talked, nodding the whole way through. "You passed your detective's audition," she says. "Thanks." And I'd love just to be the guy who says, "And no, I can't help you." But that's not who I am. At least, it's not who I am when an attractive woman pitches up at the front door late at night. "Is she attractive?" "Yep. Now I'm a good judge. I have, after all, pretty much judged every woman I've ever met based on their looks. And while that might make me a bit of an asshole, it does mean I've got plenty of experience. Her hair is tied pretty severely back, so she'll likely go up a notch or two in the attractiveness scale when she lets it down. "Have you got a name?" I ask. "Are you to be known in the cast of characters as Police Officer 1 or something? Though that play means you're going to get killed in the first 5 minutes. She laughs and extends her hand. "Constable Mara," she says. "Elaine, thanks for asking me in." Shake her hand and then nod. Enough of the jokey, might be flirtatious bullshit. Time to get down to business. "What's up?" "Missing young woman, 22, hasn't been seen in a couple of days. Lives with her mum and stepdad in the village. Has a boyfriend who stays over sometimes. He's the same age, also lives with his parents. She works part-time at the post office. No history of running away. No history of just disappearing. I gave it a day and a half, but really it's just kind of weird. It's not like her. I need to do something." She pauses then says, "You heard about the movie?" "The movie? There's a film production in town." "Ah, that's what it is. I haven't spoken to anyone since I got here, bar a nod and a thank you to the kid who was working checkout in the small supermarket. But on the far side of the village are a few mobile caravans, a couple of large trucks set up in a field. There was obviously something going on, but I hadn't asked and hadn't been out that way. Yeah, a low-budget vampire movie, kind of trash, but you know, there's a little bit of that movie glamour around town, although if Hollywood is 10 out of 10 movie glamour, this is about a 1, maybe 1.5 since the lead actor was in Vigil, so some people have heard of him." "How does this involve the girl?" "Potentially not at all, but they've been looking for extras. She'd volunteered and done a couple of days filming. That was last week. Might be of no significance, but it's the only thing that's really disturbing the peace of our sleepy little village at the moment." "The boyfriend? Sandy, nice kid, everyone knows him. I mean, it's tough for me to judge, just one of those kids that's been no trouble to anyone. A boyfriend's always going to be an obvious suspect, of course, but there's nothing there." She leaves it at that for a moment, then gets to it. "So look, I know you're on holiday, but if you could lend a hand for a day or two, I'd appreciate it. Maybe you can see something I'm missing." I take another drink of wine, even though I don't want it. Stay off to the side. There isn't really a decision to be made, of course. So missing girl, no suspects. Some strangers in town, but nothing obvious standing out about any of them. There we have it. You ask Fort William for help and they don't want to know. Well, look, I'm not going to go biting anyone in the ass here. Everyone's stretched, everyone's chasing their own tail. And there are 1,000 missing persons reports every day, and how many of them, and we're nodding along together long before I get anywhere near the end of the sentence, and so I don't bother finishing it. We take a drink in unison, setting the glasses back on the table with the kind of precision that wins Olympic synchronised chugging medals. "Okay, you got me for a couple of days, then let's see where we are." She looks relieved, which has to be something of a first. Let's be honest, there aren't many people who are relieved to find me working a case with them. My reputation obviously hasn't preceded me quite this far. "Thanks, Sergeant. You sure?" "I've got a month to walk in the hills. A couple of days won't make too much difference. Who have you got to so far?" "Thank you." Another drink. I think she's getting through the wine quickly to get out of my hair, rather than to crack on with the bottle. I've had a word with all the principal characters in the village, but no time for the in-depth interview. And no one's leaping off the page. Nope. How about the film people? I've spoken to the producer, and there's someone in charge of... And she pauses to find the word casting. I guess, in charge of extras and whatever. So I've had those conversations, but that's it for now. How many people involved in the movie? 27 here for the duration, a yet to be determined number coming and going. Okay, we've got a lot of talking to do. She puffs out her cheeks, lets out a long breath. I appreciate it, Sergeant. And you know, I'm just a hired hand here, say there'll be no rank crap for me, it's your show. Thank you, but... And she finishes the thought with a dismissive hand, lifts the glass, drains a drink and places it back on the table. We can work together, she says. Hopefully we'll get to the office in the morning to the message that Miss Schaffer has arrived home from a 48 bounder in the sleazy strip joints of Fort William. Fort William has sleazy strip joints. She gets to her feet, starts pulling on her jacket. That particular line was out of my mouth before I could do anything about it. She smiles, doesn't answer, heads for the door. Thanks, Sergeant. I'll see you in the morning. I'll be there at 8, I say boldly. And then she's opening the door, a small wave, and then she's gone, closing the door behind her. And I'm standing there in the silence of a small cottage in the middle of the Highlands, and suddenly I'm investigating the disappearance of a young woman from nowhere. I get a familiar ill feeling in my gut. Sure, most missing person cases are cleared up in a few hours and the dust is settled and no one's been hurt. But every now and again you end up with a photograph of a young woman in the news, and there are worried parents, and then there are grieving parents, and then there's a murder investigation. Walk back into the kitchen. The half-finished glass of wine and the unfinished bottle stare back at me. Fuck, I mutter to the room. Then I lift the bottle and stick it back in the fridge, and lift the glass and pour the contents into my mouth. And then I'm walking through to the bathroom, and the tiredness that had been catching up with me comes flooding back. I'm standing down by the shore of the loch, tossing stones in the water, waiting for the arrival of Abigail Connolly, head of casting. We arranged to meet here. Better than sitting in this lousy so-called cottage, she said over the phone. Tossing stones in the water appears to be a reasonable metaphor for the state of my contribution to proceedings so far, having exchanged a couple of texts with Mara, feeling a little embarrassed by my lack of progress. I suggested I go to Fort William. She insisted that wasn't necessary. Ellis, the guy in the rowing boat that I saw earlier, has been slowly making his way across the loch towards me. Wouldn't have taken him all this time. He must have been fishing or exercising or something. Although there's a small jetty a little further along, I assume he's aiming to beach the boat and walk into town. Errands to run, rather than an eagerness to speak to me. I stop throwing stones as he approaches in case I let go of a stray one and whack him in the head. That, by the way, would not be a first. I don't have the best aim, even when there's an entire loch before me. I missed Loch Fyne once. Hit a toddler. There was a scene. The waves on the shore are silent, the air is still, and the only sound is the gentle splash of the oars in the water. I stick my hands in my pockets and watch his approach, as he pulls the oars inside the boat and lets it glide to stop on the beach. If I picked up some other vibe, I might help him pull the boat up onto the stones, but this guy doesn't want anything from me. He steps onto the shore, then quickly pulls the boat up out of the water, dragging it up to the top of the small beach, so that the bow is dumped in the long grass. He sorts the oars out, straightening them up, and then starts to walk up the short path towards the road. Throughout his brief arrival on land, there's been nothing to indicate that he's even noticed I'm here. I'm like an unseen ghost, or a woman at a meeting of senior executives. Hey, I say quietly to his back. He doesn't immediately stop, but there's a hesitation, and then finally, when he's about 10 yards away, he gives in to the moment and turns. He doesn't speak. I get the look, with which we police are very familiar. Detective Sergeant Hutton, I say, not bothering with my ID, he won't care. Can I have a word? Detective Sergeant? He doesn't bother approaching, I don't answer. Weren't you just throwing stones in the water? I don't answer that either. Can I have a quick word about Alice Schaffer, Mr. Ellis? His gaze is unwavering, but he's doing that thing, the staring at the police officer thing, the look that asks, really? And is that all you've got? And you're so predictable. I barely know the girl, he says, but you know her. Of course I know her. I know everyone between Inverness and Fort William, same as every other bastard. You know I'm in the police, right? I say, I mean, that was how we started the conversation, with me revealing that to you. What does that mean? It means you shouldn't talk shit. We all have our own styles. Don't judge. There are over 600 people in this town. I don't believe you know everyone. Over 5,000 in Fort William. Fuck knows how many in Inverness, with a bunch of towns and villages in between. You do not know them all. So, you know Alice Schaffer? No, I don't. You just said you did. And you just observed I was talking shit. So I bow to your superior knowledge. He turns and walks quickly away, doesn't look back. A longer, quicker stride than when he walked up the beach, meaning I'd have to run if I was going to catch up with him. I'm still watching him go when a woman holding two coffee mugs comes into view heading for the shore. Soon enough, she's standing beside me, holding forward one of the mugs. "Sergeant Hutton," she says as I take the drink. "Miss Connolly?" "Abigail, I felt bad about not inviting you to the house, so..." And she indicates the drink. She's open, smiling, relaxed. Somehow I'd got a different idea of her from Deshaun. "What's up with the house?" "Spiders. I hate spiders. Can't get out of that place quickly enough after the wake-up." I don't really have anything to say about spiders. I mean, I carry spider repellent spray everywhere, obviously, and I've covered the house, but, you know, it's just one of those places. You know what I mean? You walk in and you think, damn, this place is going to be kingdom of the spiders. She's nodding to herself, then she repeats, "Kingdom," for effect. "How many spiders have you seen?" "None." "None? That's not the point." She takes a drink of coffee. "It's the possibility of spiders, mainly the giant house spider. It's like walking along a dark alley at night or whatever. It's what you don't see scares you even more than what you do." I take a drink. Decent coffee, ruined by, I'd say, two sugars. "Where did your arachnophobia come from?" "Common sense. I mean, look at them. The way their legs move." I said to the team, "Can you just put me in a hotel, or at least in a modern place?" So, of course, I end up in the crappiest old house. It's 50% nooks and 50% crannies. Can't help laughing at that. And she laughs along with me, shivering at the thought of the house as she does so. "Anyway, I like to get out," she says. "And this is a much better spot than my kitchen. So it's not because you've got the missing woman tied up in the basement." My tone is fairly neutral, and she's to look at me to see exactly where I'm coming from. Since my face is deadpan, looking at me doesn't really help. "Is that... wait, what? We're not here to talk about spiders. Or your movie. There's a woman missing and she's somewhere." I pause. She doesn't fill the silence, so I add the unnecessary, "And that could be the reason you don't want me at your house, rather than spiders." "Oh, wow. I didn't see that coming." "You didn't think the police officer investigating a disappearance would ask about the person who's disappeared? Since you put it like that." She takes a drink of coffee, looking troubled, turning her gaze across the loch. "No, of course not," she says, finally answering the question. And now there's an edge to the conversation out of nowhere, which I hadn't intended. Oh, fuck it, we're not on a date. Too often in the past, the audience might note, Detective Sergeant Hutton has treated interviews with women as dates, rather than as part of a murder inquiry. "You spoke to Constable Mara already?" I ask, and she nods. "I know you didn't have much to report at the time. Have you thought of anything since yesterday? Have you spoken to anyone about Alice? Is there anyone in the crew who you specifically think I should be speaking to?" "You want me to imply that maybe someone does have her locked in the basement?" she asks caustically. That's the trouble with treating interviews as crime investigations rather than casual flirtations with a side of police work. The interviewee is on edge, which is fine if they're under suspicion, but kind of gets in the way if you're looking to pick up a random piece of gossip that might lead somewhere. "I'm just bringing logic to the party," I say, a familiar quality of regret in my voice. "There's a reason I'm on holiday for the month that transcends having been stupid enough to sleep with the chief. I need the break. I'm jaded, not sure the last time I did a decent job. Yesterday a police officer turned up at your office and it would have been out of the blue. You've had a day to think about it. People in the crew have likely been talking about it. Has anything come to mind or has anyone said anything that might have sparked a thought?" I take a drink of coffee, just so I can tip the mug towards her a little and nod in appreciation of the tasty beverage. A few words, moderately kind gesture, allow a short silence, enjoy the beautiful surroundings and the perfect still of the loch, and hopefully manage to get the mood of the whole thing back on track. "But Alice wasn't set a few days ago," she says, her tone a little less defensive. "I'd get it if she disappeared the night of the party, but she was reported missing. When? Tuesday morning. So, you know, it wasn't like she had a thing with one of the guys or someone on Friday and was never seen again. She was at work on Monday, right? You know, a couple of us were talking about it yesterday, but nobody really knew anything. The only other person who outright remembered her was Sally in makeup. The artist is always going to know everyone." "Sally in makeup? Sure, she's at the guest house on the way to the Glen." And she indicates a way to her right, a pause, and then she adds, "Nice view of the loch." "How many makeup people do you have?" "3. And it was Sally who did the whatever for Alice. Well, you know, this is small budget, right? Like if Twilight was Real Madrid, we'd be Doncaster Rovers. I get it. So makeup is a stretch. We had 4 feature vampires, the ones who the team made an effort with, and everyone else, we were basically asking them to do a bit of fancy dress. Turn up on set as though you were going out on Halloween, that kind of thing. Then the team went round them all just to make sure they had the right look and to add the odd whatever. And Alice wasn't one of your feature vampires." "Oh no, all the feature vampires are named cast members. Then we had this big set piece, you know, kind of a vampire orgy that turns into a bloodbath." "Sounds like a great movie." She smiles weakly. "When you've got that many vampires, who in the audience is specifically looking at? 15th vampire from the left, nakedly biting into the neck of a virgin. And with vampires, you've got quite a lot of leeway anyway. You know that Sally in makeup specifically remembers Alice? Sally's terrific. She's got this, like, superpower. She remembers every job, no matter how trivial. And I don't mean she remembers everything she's done on this shoot. She can tell you the name of every actor she's ever worked with, right down to the most insignificant bit part on Downton Abbey from 8 years ago. And she's only like 25. We're pretty lucky to have her. She's doing the new Iron Man Marvel series next week, filming in London. I'll speak to Sally. Anyone else? She looks away, takes a moment. I can imagine a lot of conversations up here play out like this, fits and starts, interrupted by long periods of looking out over the water. No, she says, no one remembered anything particularly special from Friday night. You can give me a list of all the people who signed up at the same time as Alice. Sure, but I don't think that'll help. We had an open casting day a few weeks ago, just the one day, got everyone we needed, so Alice signed up at the same time as everyone else. There's a quality to her voice to suggest she's not finished, but it turns out she is. And then, just to make sure, there comes a sound of footsteps in the stones behind us, and we both turn. There's a young man approaching. He smiles at her, completely ignoring me. Abby, he says happily. Some fucking morning, right? She laughs. This guy is the infectious, good-humoured type. I'm immune to that particular infection. Mind if I go for the swim? He asks, and she laughs again and indicates the loch. You're nuts, Randall. Oh, aye. He's wearing a sweatshirt, jogging bottoms and flip-flops. Then he stands at the edge of the loch, whips the top off, kicks away the flip-flops, whips the trousers off. He's butt naked. Then he walks quickly into the water, making the appropriate noises as he goes. Randall is ripped. But I don't want to be here when he gets out. No one wants to see a bald, bare penis having spent any amount of time in water the temperature of this loch in November. She's still laughing as Randall progresses quickly into the water. Then he dives forward, dunks his head, and then comes up yelping and gasping, letting it all out into the still of a Highland morning. We watch him. He's the only show in town, after all. When he's far enough out to tread water, he turns and looks back at us. You coming in, Abby? Maybe later, she calls back through another laugh. It's pretty fucking warm, he shouts. Then he turns and starts swimming away from shore. Flint crawl, his perfectly formed butt cheeks sticking out of the water. Does he do that every day, I ask. I've not been down here this time of day before. Thought you'd like to get out. She looks at me. The smile that's been in her face since Randall appeared is gone. The slightly uncomfortable edge returns. Look around you, Sergeant, she says. There are a lot of places to go that aren't my shitty little one-bedroomed.